Welcome back to Story Time with David and Mommy. David is just getting some Legos, so he will be here in just a minute. So we're on Chapter 10 of Kidnapped, the Siege of the Roundhouse. But now our time of truce was come to an end. Those on deck had waited for my coming till they grew impatient, and scarce had Alan spoken when the captain showed his face in the open door.
"Stand!"
cried Alan, and pointed his sword at him. The captain stood indeed, but he neither winced nor drew back a foot.
"A naked sword," says he. "This is a strange return for hospitality." "Do you see me?" said Alan. "I am come of kings. I bear a king's name. My badge is the oak. Do you see me sword? It has slashed the heads off more wigamores than you have toes upon your feet. Call up your vermin to your back, sir, and fall on. The sooner the clash begins, the sooner you'll taste the steel through your victuals."
The captain said nothing to Alan, but he looked over at me with an ugly look.
"David," said he, "all mind this."
And the sound of his voice went through me with a jar. The next moment he was gone.
And now,
said Alan, let your hand keep
your head, for the grip is coming."
Alan drew a dirk, which he held in his left hand in case they should run under his sword. I, on my part, clambered up into the berth with an armful of pistols and something of a heavy heart, and set open the window where I was to watch. It was a small part of the deck that I could overlook, but enough for our purpose. The sea had gone down, and the wind was steady and kept the sails quiet, so that there was a great stillness in the ship, in which I made sure I had heard the sound of muttering voices. A little after, and there came a clash of steel upon the deck, by which I knew they were dealing out the cutlasses, and one had been let fall, and after that, silence again. I do not know if I was what you call afraid, but my heart beat like a bird's, both quick and little, and there was a dimness that came before my eyes which I continually rubbed away and which continually returned. As for hope, I had none, but only a darkness of despair and a sort of anger against all the world that made me long to sell my life as dear as I was able. I tried to pray, I remember, but the same hurry of my mind, like a man running, would not suffer me to think upon the words, and my chief wish was to have the thing begin and be done with it. It came all of a sudden when it did, with a rush of feet and a roar, and then a shout from Alan, and a sound of blows, and someone crying out as if hurt. I looked back over my shoulder and saw Mr. Sean in the doorway, crossing blades with Alan.
"That's him that killed the boy," I cried. "Look to your window," said Alan,
and as I turned back to my place, I saw him pass his sword through the mate's body. It was none too soon for me to look to my Mr. Sean. So Alan just killed Mr. Sean, the guy who killed Ransom.
What?
Yeah. So they're having a battle in the roundhouse now. Remember, the guys were, the captain and the two mates decided they were going to try to steal all of Alan's stuff. And Alan is the guy who was on the little boat that got run over by their big ship, and Alan was the only survivor. He jumped off of the boat onto the bowsprit of the ship.
Alan is killed?
No, Alan's alive. Alan is the new guy. He was the one, he was on this little boat that the big ship that Davy is on crashed into. Yeah, and so Alan came on board, and he's the one who had the belt of gold. He had all these gold coins in his belt, and the Captain Hosian and the two first mates, Mr. Sean and Mr. I can't remember the other guy's name.
Ryach,
yeah. Good job remembering that, honey.
I had it go through my brain.
Yeah, you went through it faster than me. They want to kill Alan to steal his stuff, but then Davy couldn't help them with that. They wanted him to help him do that, but he said no, he wasn't going to do that. And he told Mr. Alan what was going on. And so now Davy and Alan are in the roundhouse and it's being attacked, and Alan has just killed Mr. Sean.
Good.
Let's see. It was none too soon for me to look to my own part, for my head was scarce back at the window before 5 men, carrying a spare yard for a battering ram, ran past me and took post to drive the door in. I had never fired with a pistol in my life, and not often with a gun, far less against a fellow creature. But it was now or never, and just as they swung the yard, I cried out, "Take that!" and shot into their midst. I must have hit one of them, for he sang out and gave back a step, and the rest stopped and looked as if a little disconcerted. Before they had time to recover, I sent another ball over their heads, and my third shot, which went as wide as the second, the whole party threw down the yard and ran for it. Then I looked round again into the deckhouse. The whole place was full of smoke of my own firing, just as my ears seemed to burst with the noise of the shots. But there was Alan, standing as before. Now only his sword was running, blood to the hilt, and himself so swelled with triumph and fallen in so fine an attitude that he looked to be invincible. Right before him on the floor was Mr. Sean, on his hands and knees. The blood was pouring from his mouth, and he was sinking slowly lower with a terrible white face. And just as I looked, some of those from behind caught hold of him by the heels and dragged him bodily out of the roundhouse. I believe he died as they were doing it.
I think if someone loses blood, you should call a blood bank.
Blood bank? That's a good idea, honey.
What number is a blood bank?
What number is a blood bank?
Yeah.
Well, so what happens is if somebody was really badly wounded like that, you take them to the hospital, they go to the emergency department, and then you can do a blood transfusion in the emergency department. So the blood bank is where people go and donate blood, and then they store it at the blood bank. But then that blood gets sent to different hospitals so that they can give it to people who have emergencies if they need to.
But then the other person would lose blood.
Yeah, but we make new blood all the time. So
I think I'm already pumped up with blood, mm-hmm. But my heart's not pumping that fast.
Oh, your heart's probably pumping just as it needs to pump.
How fast it needs to pump. I think what I move is like defeating some of the blood, so it has to get more blood.
There's one of your wigs for ya, cried Alan, and then turning to me, he asked if I had done much execution. I told him I had winged one and thought he was the captain. And I've settled two, says he. Now there's not enough blood let. They'll be back again. To your watch, David. This was but a dram before the meat. I settled back to my place, recharging the 3 pistols I had fired and keeping watch with both eye and ear. Our enemies were disputing not far off upon the deck, and so loudly that I could hear a word or two above the washing of the seas.
"It was Sean botched it," I heard one say.
Another man answered him with a,
"Wizard man, he's paid the piper."
After that, the voices fell again into the same muttering as before. Only now one person spoke most of the time, as though laying down a plan, and the first one and then another answered him briefly, like men taking orders. By this they made sure that they were coming on again and told Alan.
"That's what we have to pray for," said he, "unless we can give them a good distaste of us and be done with it. There'll be no sleep for either you nor me, but this time, mind, they'll be in earnest."
By this my pistols were ready, and there was nothing to do but listen and wait. While the brush lasted, I had not the time to think if I was frightened. But now, when all was still again, my mind ran upon nothing else. The thought of the sharp swords and the cold steel was strong in me, and presently when I began to hear stealthy steps and brushings of men's clothes against the roundhouse wall, and knew that they were taking their places in the dark, I could have found it in my mind to cry out aloud. All this was upon Alan's side, and had begun to think my share of the fight was at an I had begun to think my share of the fight was at an end, when I heard someone drop softly on the roof above me. Then there came a single call on the sea pipe, and that was the signal. A knot of them made one rush for it, cutlass in hand, against the door, and at the same moment the glass of the skylight was dashed in 1,000 pieces, and a man leapt through and landed on the floor. Before he got his feet, I had clapped a pistol to his back and might have shot him too, Only at the touch of him, and him alive, my whole flesh misgave me, and I could no more pull the trigger than I could have flown. He had dropped his cutlass as he jumped, and when he felt the pistol, whipped straight around and laid hold of me, roaring out an oath. And at that, either my courage came again, or I grew so much afraid of him, as came the same thing, for I gave a shriek and shot him in the midst of the body. He gave the most horrible, ugly groan and fell to the floor. The foot of a second fellow, whose legs were dangling through the skylight, struck me at the same time upon the head, and at that I snatched another pistol and shot this one through the thigh so that he slipped through and tumbled in a lump on his companion's body. There was no talk of missing, any more than there was of time to aim. I clapped the muzzle to the very place and fired. I might have stood and stared at them for long, but I heard Alan shout as if for help, and that brought me to my senses. He had kept the door so long, but one of the seamen, while he was engaged with the others, had run in under his guard and caught him about the body. Alan was dirking him with his left hand, but the fellow clung like a leech. Another had broken in and had his cutlass raised. The door was thronged with their faces. I thought we were lost, and catching up my cutlass, fell on them in flank. But I had not time to be of help. The wrestler dropped at last, and Alan, leaping back to get his distance, ran up upon the others like a bull, roaring as he went. They broke before him like water, turning, running, and falling one against another in their haste. The sword in his hands flashed like quicksilver into the huddle of our fleeing enemies, and at every flash there came a scream of a man hurt. I was still thinking that we were lost, when lo, they were all gone. Alan was driving them along the deck as a sheepdog chases sheep. Yet he was no sooner out than he was back again, being as cautious as he was brave. And meanwhile the seaman continued running and crying out as if he were still behind them, and we heard them tumble one upon another into the forecastle and clap to the hatch upon the top. The roundhouse was like a shambles. Three were dead inside, another lay in his death agony on the threshold, and there were Alan and I, victorious and unhurt. He came up to me with open arms. "Come to me, arms!" he cried, and embraced and kissed me hard upon both cheeks. "David," said he, "I love you like a brother. And, oh, man," he cried in a kind of ecstasy, "am I no a bonny fighter?" Thereupon he turned to the four enemies, passed his sword clean through each of them, and tumbled them out of the doors one after the other. As he did so, he kept humming and singing and whistling to himself like a man trying to recall an air. Only what he was trying was to make one. All the while, the flush was in his face, and his eyes were as bright as a 5-year-old child's with a new toy, and presently he sat down upon the table, sword in hand. The air that he was making all the time began to run a little clearer, and then clearer still, and then he burst out with a great voice into a Gaelic song. I have translated it here, not in verse, of which I have no skill, but at least in the King's English. He sang it often afterwards, and the thing became popular, so that I have heard it, and had it explained to me many's the time. "This is the song of the sword of Alan the smith made it, the fire set it, now it shines in the hand of Alan Breck. Their eyes were many and bright, swift were they to behold, many the hands they guided, the sword was alone. The deer done troop over the hill, there are many, the hill is one. The din deer vanish, the hill remains. Come to me from the hills of heather, come to me from the isles of sea. Oh, far beholding eagles, here is your meat." Okay, that was the best I could do on the fly. Now, this song, which he made, both words and music, in 1 hour of our victory, is something less than just to me, who stood beside him in the tussle. Mr. Sean and five more were either killed outright or thoroughly disabled, but of these, two fell by my hand, the two that came by the skylight. Four more were hurt, and of that number, one, and he not the least important, got his hurt from me. So that altogether I did my fair share of both killing and the wounding, and might have claimed a place in Alan's verses. But the poets, as a very wise man once told me, have to think upon their rhymes. And in good prose talk, Alan always did me more than justice. In the meanwhile, I was innocent of any wrong being done me, for not only I knew no word of Gaelic, but with the long suspense of the waiting and the scurry and strain of our two spirits of fighting, and more than all the horror I had of some of my own share in it, the thing was no sooner over than I was glad to stagger to a seat. There was that tightness on my chest that I could hardly breathe, the thought of the two men that I had shot upon me like a nightmare. And all of a sudden, and before I had guess of what was coming, I began to sob and cry like any child. Alan clapped my shoulder and said that I was a brave lad, and I wanted nothing but a sleep. "I'll take the first watch," said he. "You've done well by me, David, first and last, and I wouldn't lose you for all Appin, no, nor for Breadalbane." So I made up my bed on the floor, and he took the first spell, pistol in hand and sword on the knee, 3 hours by the captain's watch upon the wall. Then he roused me up, and I took my turn of 3 hours, before the end of which it was broad day and a very quiet morning, with a smooth rolling sea that tossed the ship and made the blood run to and fro on the roundhouse floor, and a heavy rain that drummed upon the roof. All my watch there was nothing stirring, but by the banging of the helm I knew that they had even no one at the tiller. Indeed, as I learned afterwards, there were so many of them hurt or dead, and the rest so ill in temper, that Mr. Ryach and the captain had to take turn and turn like Alan and me, or the brig might have gone ashore and nobody the wiser. It was a mercy that night had fallen so still, for the wind had gone down as soon as the rain began. Even as it was, I judged by the wailing of a great number of gulls that went crying and fishing round the ship, that she must have drifted pretty near the coast of one of the islands of the Hebrides. And at last, looking out of the door of the roundhouse, I saw the great stone hills of Skye on the right hand, and a little more astern, the strange Isle of Rum. All right, that's the end of chapter 10. Next is chapter 11, The Captain Knuckles Under. All right. And you say bye, podcast listeners, honey. Bye, podcast listeners. That was an exciting chapter. And just so you know, that other word we were trying to find the definition for, we were not able to find the definition for it. I think that it means acclimated to, like, islands and island life, which would make sense. But it might be a word that Robert Louis Stevenson just made up. I don't know. Or it might be one that's just out of practice completely. So we will see you next time for chapter 11, The Captain Knuckles Under. I'll see if I can come up with a better melody for Alan's song. We'll see. That's what it's called. The next chapter is called The Captain Knuckles Under. What knuckles under generally means is that you get determined to, you are determined to get something done. No matter what. I think so. Yeah. So we'll see what that means. Could be. You mean Davy and Alan. Right. Yeah. You know, interesting. Wasn't Alan the name of the guy who Long John killed, the first guy on the island? Wasn't that Alan?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the same book. And he wrote Treasure Island before he wrote Kidnapped, but maybe he just likes certain words, certain names, you know, like Alan.
Maybe he didn't shoot him in the heart, he shot him in the thigh, and it healed, and he was on this bike, which was wrecked by another girl, which is
no.
In this book.
Do you remember how Long John killed Alan? He threw his crutch at him, and it hit Alan in the back, and then he leapt on him and stabbed him.
But not in the heart.
But he stabbed him in the back, which is, you stab in the back and it goes into the heart and the lungs. So I think Long John definitely killed Alan. I think this is just a different Alan. I mean, maybe Alan was pretending the whole time, but you know, I kind of doubt it. All right. Bye, podcast listeners. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye, 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 bye.
Bye, Alan Podcasters.
Bye. Bye. Bye.